Position number 22369, rule 4.
General Buckland, rail 4. I think you also saw service in British Guiana in the 60s?
That's right. I was commanding the 1st Battalion then, and we were ordered to go and replace the Suffolk Regiment, who were out there. We really were required to make sure that the law and order was kept at all times. One's problems were really how to keep the men amused and how to stop them all getting venereal disease.
How do you do that?
Well, I persuaded the MOD to let me take out 5,000 French letters as a start. I was worried because the Suffolk Regiment had a very high incident rate. So I lectured the entire battalion, and I got the doctor to speak to them all. And we kept the incidence down to 2 per week, which I thought was extremely good, really. And only one man got it more than once. But how to keep them amused, what I did was to... We had the battalion split up all over the place. The main base was at the big airfield called Atkinson Field, which was about 25 miles south of Georgetown, the capital. And I, with one company and a half, were in the capital so as to be near the commissioner of police and the governor with my tactical headquarters. We had a platoon right out in the far west, and another one in the far east at a place called Rose Hall. And I was able to organize training for a company at a time, way down in the southeast of the colony, at a place called Takama, where we sent vehicles down there on a barge going down the Corentin River, and the company drove there as well. It was a very long, tough 12-hour journey down through the partly sort of jungly type of country, but track going through it. The other thing we did was to get people to go on expeditions. And I remember I hired an aircraft with 5 officers, and we went to have a look at the Kai Tor Falls, which are 700-foot drop and very interesting to see. We landed above the falls on a seaplane and took a picnic lunch and looked out over the falls, and then took off back again over the falls, it were. So if the aircraft had stalled, we'd have been in the dire trouble. But lots of people did splendid expeditions, and there was a big bauxite mine that we sent people to have a look at. As a place called Mackenzie. And we used to shoot caiman at night. You would fix a Land Rover, and you get your people with their rifle at the ready. You'd turn on the headlights, and you'd see the caiman's 2 eyes glowing a sort of ready colour, and you'd aim between them. And provided you didn't slaughter them to too great a degree, the locals were extremely pleased that we kept the population down.
Why didn't they want them all wiped out then?
Well, because ecology, they eat other things which are not good, etc., etc. And if you wipe out some particular species completely, you spoil the ecological balance. But they were happy to have them kept down in numbers because they were apt to bite the leg of some poor little boy or something.
What was the nature of the disturbances in British Guiana?
Well, the Prime Minister then was a gentleman called Chidi Jagan, who was a very nice man and a very good dentist. But he was not a frightfully good prime minister because he had what I rather naughtily described as a cabal surrounding him of five very left-wing people, and his wife, who was an American, and she was frightfully communistic. And I don't quite know what she'd done exactly, but she went on board a Russian ship which arrived in the harbor to pick up some pamphlets. And people discovered this, and we had to get her away from there under protection extremely quickly. That was the sort of start of it. Jagan then decided that he wanted to do away with all the trades unions and only have one per trade. And he was quite plainly going to make sure that the trade union which survived was a left-wing one. So the TUC out there said, we won't have this, we're going to have a general strike. And they called one. And I don't know if it's easier for you to imagine a country about the size of the United Kingdom with nothing happening at all, no transport. They didn't have they only had one train, anyhow. No flights in or out, no ships being offloaded. So I got, with the approval of the War Office, an arrangement that post and papers were flown out to Suriname, which was the next country to the east of us. And I had a light aircraft, which I sent over there to bring in the post and the papers, so at least people had something to read and knew what was happening at home. This was after we'd been without any news at all for about a fortnight. And they were able to write home, and it went out again the same way. So at least we knew what was happening. And the only communication with England was via my radio set to CGHQ at Cheltenham, because cable and wireless were also on a strike. Now, I unfortunately had to leave the battalion shortly before they were due to come home in order to go to another job. So my successor, Alan Pemberton, took over from me, and I came back in a frigate as far as Barbados and then flew home. But
so this general strike was directed against Chetty Jagan?
Yes.
And did you actually meet Chetty Jagan and Janet Jagan?
Oh, yes, I met him. I acted on a number of occasions as a go-between between him and the governor. And I thought at one stage, because I said to him, I can't think why you don't drop this idea. We've always been taught in the army that you only fight for something which is absolutely vital. And scrapping trades unions is not particularly vital. Bring it up again in 2 or 3 years' time, if you feel inclined, or just quietly drop it. Oh, what a good idea, he said. So I went back to the governor and told him that this is what had happened. But sadly, of course, Chetty Jagan went back to the cabal, who all said no way. Then he had to ring me up and say, I'm right, sorry, it's off. We're going on with this thing.
Did he get his own way in the end?
No. No, because you see, what eventually happened was that he was defeated at the next election by Forbes Burnham, who came into power, who was an even more unpleasant man than him, I thought.
Did you meet Forbes Burnham?
Yes, I met him.
Was What experience did you have with Forbes Burnham?
I remember the CIA arrived and they brought out a lot of money, which they gave to Forbes Burnham, to try and keep the strike on, which was mad, because keeping strikes on doesn't do anybody any good. And Forbes Burnham was sent for by the governor, and I was there, and the governor started to talk to him, and he said, "I refuse to stay in the room with the guards colonel." So Sir Ralph Gray said to him, "You'll do as I say. The guards colonel is my military advisor about this matter, so he must be here." So then he offered him a drink, and he had a rum and something in it. I'm not sure what it was. I think a rum and coke or something, or perhaps it was a whiskey and soda, and he smelt it. So Ralph Gray said to him, "Do you think I'm poisoning you?" But Forbes Burnham was an unfortunate throwback in that he was the bright scholar, law scholar, in Guyana. And so he got a scholarship to one of the British universities, where he discovered that he was now a little fish in a big pool and got a tremendous chip on his shoulder as a result of it.
Which years were you in British Guiana?
October, November 62, and came home in May 63.
How did the soldiers get on with the people there?
Extremely well. What pleased me at no end was we had no complaints. Well, we only had one complaint from somebody who was complaining about the men making a noise one night only. But I had an officer patrol go around every single night in Georgetown, picking up anybody who looked as though they were of drink taken, as it were, in any way. Because one of the problems was that rum was 4 shillings a bottle. And a soldier could therefore afford to buy a whole bottle every bloody night and drink it. And so I had to keep a very sharp eye on them and get them back home safely. But we had no incidents at all, other than this one where the lady wrote me a complaining letter, which was fairly easily sorted out. And I think one must be really extremely proud of them for the way that they did behave.
Did they get on equally well with the Asians as with the Africans?
Yes. You weren't allowed to, you weren't advised to walk about in Georgetown by yourself at night, because they had these people who came up behind you with a bicycle chain and would whip you across the face and take your note case. So you usually walked about in pairs. In Palestine, of course, when you went out at all, if you did, you went out in fours armed all times. And one used to send out a party of the police sergeant and a party every night at 10:15. Everybody had to mark out. And so at 10:15, the police sergeant went to the guard room and saw who was not back in. And we'd get them all back in by 10:30. Make quite sure that nobody was left out and about.